welcome back to Beholder to No One, a D&D podcast. Today I'm here with Jamie, the one and only, who plays Jewel of the Night in our Uncaged Anthology game at Awfully Queer Heroes. Hi, welcome.
Hi, Nikki. Thank you so much for having me today.
Of course. Now, I have known Jamie for a couple months now. We've been playing in some one-shots together. I've been DMing the Uncaged Anthology, and Jamie is going to be DMing a wonderful game. I already know it's going to be wonderful in the near future. So we're going to talk a little bit about that and just D&D, DMing, podcasting in general, whatever we want to talk about. So why don't you tell everybody a little bit about yourself?
Okay, so let's see, where do I start? Well, my name is Jamie Umansor. Online or in the gaming world, I go by Jamie Moonchild. And by day, I am a diversity, equity, and inclusion consultant. And by night, although it's not really by night, it's kind of all the time with how obsessed I am with D&D, I am a gamer, a D&D fanatic, and I do very proudly identify as a queer woman of color and daughter of immigrants. I have a fluffy dog who is almost 14 years old, and a wonderful partner who is very supportive of everything that I do.
That's awesome. That is why in your D&D game, you wanted to have a focus on a particular subject matter and world, correct?
Yes, absolutely. So what I consider my adult formative years, I spent living in Hawaii on the island of Oahu, specifically on the west side of the island. And it was a very immersive experience. From the time that I stepped off the plane, I knew that I was home. I felt a connection to the land in a way that I had never felt before living in California for the first part of my life at that time. And the culture, the ancestral ties resonated so deeply with me. And I got really involved with some community groups, some Hawaiian elders. And from there, it started to bring me to life in a way that I never expected, the connection to Indigenous spirituality and Indigenous culture. And I was very blessed to have been adopted into more than one Native Hawaiian family. And when I discovered D&D, it was toward the end of my life living in Hawaii, and I decided that I really wanted to pay homage to this amazing culture and to the Hawaiian sovereignty movement. And that's where my world came from, really inspired by pre-colonial Hawaii and the fight for modern day sovereignty. And I wanted to give people a chance to experience Hawaiian culture and the opportunity to fight off the colonizers. If Hawaii was never colonized, then this is what life could have been like. If we could have fought off those colonizers, then this is what it could have been like.
That's really fun. I know that we were going to, originally our intent was that I was going to be part of that game. And then we switched it a little bit, which is actually, I think, more fitting. And now it's going to be a full BIPOC group. And from what you've told me, you have a ton of people to go through.
Yes. And so I really want to give credit and credence to our main cast for Awfully Queer Heroes. And when Kel did ask if I would be open to DMing, at the time, I didn't realize, because we're all spread across different parts of the world, that I am the only BIPOC person, BIPOC being Black, Indigenous, and person of color. I didn't realize I was the only BIPOC person on the cast until it was brought to my attention. There was one person that I made an assumption, hearing the way that they spoke about colonialism and knowing they were from a set of islands, that they also identified as BIPOC. And so what I appreciated was, you know, Kel came to me and they were a little worried whether I would take this news that they were about to share with me. And they said, you know, some people have brought some concerns and we're all white and we don't want to be those white people who culturally appropriate and represent Indigenous peoples. It's not right. And so, which I very much appreciated. In my mind, I thought, gosh, I didn't even think to like, hey, can I see your picture? How do you identify? You know, it's just not something that you would, I would normally think to ask. And so from there, I started looking at, okay, how can I turn my world into, or the campaign into a visitor's perspective that would still honor the some of the cultural traditions that I built into there and some of the decolonial approaches to D&D in the game without having a white cast representing Indigenous people. And so that's what I started working on. And I had a little trouble with it. And I think Kel recognized that also. And unbeknownst to me, more conversations were happening in the background when I started to share more of the information. Okay, so here's what I'm, the route I'm going with for our team. And Kel came back and asked like, hey, can we talk? I wanted to run an idea by you. And they were worried again, you know, how I might take it because they wanted to make sure that I didn't feel like I was being put out or anything, which I didn't. And they said, Jamie, what do you think about the opportunity for an entire BIPOC team? They said, your world is so incredible. It deserves to be experienced and brought to life in its full authenticity. Mm-hmm. And I will admit my initial response, I was very nervous because of anxiety and different reasons and wondering, you know, how many folks could I find? But really in my heart, my heart skipped a beat. I got to be honest. And I thought the possibility of having an entire BIPOC team would be so incredible because there are so few out there, but and even more so a queer BIPOC team, even less representation out there. And so once I wrapped my head around that possibility, we put the call out on social media. And I think right now we're at about 17, maybe at the last time I checked, 17 people who submitted their information and answered our questions as interested in being a part of the team potentially. Great problem to have. Didn't think that we would have 17 people. And I will say that I did prioritize those who identify as Indigenous, and there are at least 7 people of those 17 who identify as Indigenous. So now it's just going to be a matter of scheduling and who's available during the time that we end up settling on for this. And we are going to go with, if all goes well, we are going to go with Twitch streaming to really bring that representation to life, and then also porting that over to podcasts like these. And like Awfully Queer Heroes podcast, or main team podcast, I should say.
Yeah. I think that it was the right decision. I'm a little sad because I can't play in it. Because I know when you first mentioned it, I didn't even think about that concept. I just thought about, oh, cool, that's such a fun idea. Because I love experiencing worlds from the perspective of mm-hmm. other people. That's what I like to do because that's how I learn about it. But then I was like, wait, shit. Damn it. No, I don't think we should. I don't know if this is okay, guys. But yes, I know that my character that I made up can technically fit in another world. So we are going to bring, some of us are going to bring the characters to the new game. Because honestly, I need to play my furball Grung. I have to.
Yes, it was such a clever creation. I was excited for that character too. So I'm glad that it's still your character still gets to have a life and experiences. And
we're like, Adam, no, I need to play my character. I need to play this character. Please let me play this character. She has art and everything. So I don't know what Adam's going to be doing yet, but I know that Adam stepped up and he's going to be taking over DMing, I believe, for the new show. There's plenty of time to figure that out. For now, I'll just continue DMing mm-hmm. Uncaged Anthology until that's all decided.
Which is so much fun, by the way. I love having you as a DM for that. You roll with our shenanigans in such a way. It's so much fun.
Yeah, rolling with shenanigans is like, I don't know. That gets me in trouble sometimes, but also sometimes I'm just like connecting dots. I'm like, wait a second. Where can I go with this? And sometimes that leads to problems.
Great problems, though. The way you connect those dots is, it's really inspiring because there are times in the, you know, recent episodes that we've done that you brought something up in a way that I didn't even consider that. This is so cool.
I know that This just happened Monday, so I don't think I haven't talked about this yet. New thing for the podcast. This is a unique circumstance. Usually I've already repeated all my stories. So this past Monday in my game, I only had one thing planned. So they were on a journey. They had 14 more days of travel. I had planned out what days were going to have a fight, what the fights were, had everything figured out. They were on the 15th day, and I'm like, okay, cool. Today, they're going to fight two Githyanki warriors. That is what's on the table. That's what we're going to do. As they're walking up, they roll perception checks. I'm like, do I want them to fight the Gith? What if the Gith are just eating lunch and chilling? Nah, that's what they're doing now. Okay, cool. And I was like, you walk up, and you see two greenish humanoids that are sitting down. They don't look like orcs, though. They you don't really recognize them. Roll a history check. Someone rolls high enough. I'm like, oh, they look like Gith. You don't really remember much about them, except that they're from the astral plane. And someone, I might be saying this completely out of order because it was a very chaotic 3 hours game. So they went up to them and talked to them, and they're like, oh, we're here on a mission. And I'm like, oh, shit, what mission are they here on? And I'm looking up Gith lore and see that they used to be enslaved by mind flayers. And they just recently broke out of that enslavement and fought back. So I decided that they were here on this material plane to fight mind flayers. And they're like, we heard of a duo of mind flayers nearby. We were sent from our home to take care of them, and then we're going to go home. So the party's like, do you need help? We can help. We can fight mind flayers. That sounds cool. And they're like, yeah, well, just be careful because they gave them the history of mind flayers, basically. So they fought the Mind Flayers. The one Gith gave their name, the other did not. So that he became Gary, according to the party. And I kept saying, not Gary, but not Gary almost died, like, this close. Ooh. I had advantage on the literal last blow and rolled a 1 and a 3 that close. And I'm like, oh, he has 6 more seconds to live. You better kill them this round. So they kill the Mind Flayers. Then I'm looking at Plane Shift. They're like, okay, thank you so much for your help. We're going to go back home. And I'm looking at Plane Shift, and it's like, huh, I can Plane Shift 8 people. There's 5 people in this party. Would you guys like to visit our home? And they're like, what? Yeah, where's your home? The astral plane. Kinda. And all the play out of character are like, yes, 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 we do. Yes. And my husband wasn't playing. I had to go wake him up and be like, hey, Keith, are you okay with going to the astral plane? He's like, what? I'm like, just say yes or no. So the Gith did say, like, I just want to warn you, time works differently there. I look 72. I'm actually 72,000 years old. It's like, so if you go there, every hour you're there will be 42 years here. So you just need to be prepared for that. Are you willing to do that? And they're like, yeah, sure, whatever. So they go and they spend an hour or two there. And I was like, they literally, the only notes I had, I looked up astral plane and I saw the color pools. So I made up some ritual on the spot about how they would become tethered to the world by the color pools. And then I decided, what if there's a city here? And it is futuristic. So I made up the city on the spot after they walked away. And then I'm like, I was actually very proud of this because I just like looked up. I like, while playing, Googling images here, like, what images can I find? And after about 6 hours, I'm like, I just want you to know that 6 hours have passed. It has now been 300 something years. Do you want to go back home or do you want to stay here? If you stay for any longer, you may not come back to the city that you started. And they're like, oh, no, we're going to stay for at least the day. And I was like, okay. So then they were gifted a boon from the city for their help in killing the Mind Flayers. And the boon was you could have free housing for a year to get on your feet and become established in the community. You could get a free upgrade to your body, a.k.a. cybernetics type stuff, or like you can use it for something else. And then I'm like, do you guys want to do a year time jump and see so you can get accustomed to this technology world that's all run by magic and you don't understand? And they're like, yeah. I was like, okay, cool.
Yes, please. Who wouldn't, right?
Revamp all your characters. It's like you level up to level 8, revamp all your characters, tell me what you did, tell me what you did over the last year. We'll talk next week. And they've been talking.
That is so much fun, Nikki.
Nonstop all week. And I'm like, yes. It's like, and then my friend said, she made a joke on another. She's like, guys, our city building fantasy game just turned into a space travel sci-fi game. Like, I don't know how it happened. I really don't. It just kept going.
Well, I know how it happened because you're an amazing DM that rolls with the chaos and it makes these beautiful creations.
Rolls with the chaos, definitely. That is definitely, like, everything that is in that game is pretty much just like, this would be fun. It's been interesting because I realized that if I plan, I get anxious about it. Because then I'm like, mm-hmm. What if it's not perfect? What if it's not good? What if they don't like this? What if this isn't going to work? I get to overthink it. Right. If I plan enough where it's like random, I have just like a basic encounter where I have a table where I can roll off of to determine what will happen, or I just wing it, then I don't have the time to be anxious because I'm just thinking, what's the next step now? Instead of like,
right.
Oh, shit. I do like to pre-plan like the introduction to the world if I can. So like first the Uncaged Anthology, I wrote the intro to that for the first episode.
Mm-hmm.
Because I wanted to give you guys a feel of like what the city was like. And that wasn't part of the story because they're assuming you already know what Waterdeep is.
Mm-hmm.
We're not here to talk about me. Yeah, we're talking about me. We're here to talk about you. And well, we're here to talk about D&D in general.
Yes, D&D in general. So speaking of the Uncaged Anthology, I listened to our first episode and I was cracking up the entire time because, I mean, I knew it was cheesy, but wow, like, I'm super cheesy. And it's just, it's so much fun playing with the team that we have. One thing I realized, though, is I think it's pretty obvious that the Jules' fellow adventurers are trying to get one over on her.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's not obvious that Jewel, at least to the audience, is also trying to get one over on her compatriots. In fact, my partner listened and I said, hey, so is this obvious? And he said, yes. Well, is this obvious? He's like, unless you told me, he wouldn't have known that I'm a trickster paladin or that I'm not following the same deity that they are. And so I was thinking that somehow the next time that I return with the team, I need to find a way to weave that in so that hopefully by that time it's going to be what, episode 6 or 7, I think, that the audience actually figures it out, hopefully.
I mean, honestly, just add like little jokes in there and stuff like that. Like, I kind of imagined, do you watch Critical Role?
Yes, although I haven't in a while, but I do keep up on some of the events.
So do you know of Campaign 2, at least, like the characters and stuff?
Yes.
So yes. I kind of imagine Jewel as a jester-esque character that just wants to, like, play tricks on mm-hmm. people, even if they're silly and childish. Maybe not so hyper-focused on dicks specifically, but just, like...
Yes, thank you. No, thank you.
Drawing on things or, like, tricking somebody or
mm-hmm.
getting one over on somebody else. Like, I know you did a little bit, tried to do something in our little... one-on-one that we did for, I think, episode 3 or 4?
4. I think it was the between 3 and 4.
So I know that we did a little bit of something in that one that kind of showed the trickster a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But it still was also very much like, I'm here to help you unless I'm here to trick you. Because you weren't there to, like, trick them. You were trying to get them to convert to your god, basically.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So there's like a time and a place to trick people. Though I don't know how tasteful it would be if you like did too much tricking at a funeral.
Right. Definitely. I agree with that. Yeah. So that was fun trying to, I think that definitely was the first time that I intentionally, okay, let me try to slip a little something in there. And so I need to be more mindful of, okay, bring that into now moving forward, find a little something, maybe at least something small every session, if not every other, to weave that part into it.
And honestly, even if it's something small, like you want to message me that you did something and I can have you roll sleight of hand versus there, or stealth and sleight of hand versus yes. their insight or something like that. Mm-hmm. They might catch you. They might not, though. So.
Oh, my God. I love it. Yes. Okay. I'm going to write a note and plaster that on my computer so that I don't forget.
Like, literally, just message me. Like, that's the whole, that's what happened in one of the episodes. I'm not going to spoil it, but there was that scene.
Yes.
You weren't there for specifically, but one of the players was just desperately messaging me as we're recording and talking and like, I need to fix this. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And I'm just like, okay, what do you want to do? I don't know. I ask anybody. I'm like, anybody? Are you sure about that? Yes. Okay. I'm going to figure out who it is later.
Go ahead and try.
But you're not going to like it. But okay.
Oh, that's awesome.
It's like, we'll figure this out later, but we're going to go with it. Let's go. Mm-hmm. And I love who I picked too. I absolutely love it. I won't say, but I love it.
Yes. No spoilers.
Because technically, they don't know either. Like, out of character, they know, but in character, they don't know. Mm-hmm.
Very clever.
I actually like that concept a lot, where the characters don't necessarily know everything. Like, for my next upcoming game that's replacing Clearlight, I've been playing with my new character, and she made a deal with a patron because it sounded cool, and he promised her magic, and she doesn't know who the patron is. She doesn't know anything about them. She also doesn't know what race she is or where she's from.
Oh, like an amnesia kind of a thing?
Or? No, she was... So she's technically from the Shadowfell, and she was brought to the Material Plane at a young age and was raised as an orphan. She doesn't know who her parents are, so nobody told her, hey, this is who you are. She doesn't know what the Shadowfell is, necessarily. So she doesn't know what her race is, because her race technically is not a common race. It's not. It's a homebrew race that was based off of a race in the Planar Handbook from 3.5 called the Shadow Swift. And I absolutely adore the concept of it, because they have two sides of a coin. You're either super pale, almost translucent, alabaster, with like dark jet black hair and black eyes, or you are the exact opposite, where you are completely dark-skinned black and white hair. Like, drow, but like pitch midnight black. So there's two sides of the coin for the Shadowfell, and there's no gray areas for them.
Interesting for a Shadowfell place to have no gray areas.
Right. You'd think they would. But I got to basically make her up completely. And when I picked her Warlock patron, I didn't like any of the ones that were there. Like, Hexblade kind of made sense, but I was like, eh. So I found one that was like, it was literally called like Warlock patron of the Shadow or something like that. And I'm like, ha, Shadow. We're just going to overkill all Shadows.
Yes. That. So that reminds me of, I've been trying to sneak here into my D&D Beyond and see if I can find it. But one of my favorite characters that I have, I love all of my characters. I gotta be honest. I think there is not a single character that I haven't fallen so deeply in love with. But this one in particular is a Kalashtar. I love Kalashtar lore and have, yes, I've never played in Eberron yet, but I've read a lot on Kalashtar lore. And also try to look into some of the, you know, conspiracy theories and the Inspired and all that. And so there's this Kalashtar that I created. Her name is Coritana Vakri. And technically she's a reboot of a character from a campaign that I got so upset because the Deck of Many Things was brought into the campaign. And that particular player who had it had to step away. And so the DM, being the mischievous DM, my partner that he is, rolled to see, is their character going to keep pulling cards? And of course, RNGesus said, yes, you shall continue pulling the cards until we finally got the wish spell. And so what did, they were Jaegering my friend's character, and the character ended up wishing the big bad away. Well, that had so many strings attached that it ended up resetting all of our lives. We were back to the beginning of our backstories, and he gave us the life that we wished we would have had growing up this entire time. But I was upset because I loved the point that my character came to and the relationships that she was developing.
Yep.
And so because of that, I just, as a player, I hate the deck of many things because it ended that campaign in a heartbeat. And so this new character is her reboot. But what I did with this one is, so she thinks she's a college star. And that's how she was raised with her two mothers. And they're, you know, they live on their own and everything. What she doesn't know and didn't find out until the end of her backstory is that her family, they're actually inspired renegades who escaped and who want to live as college star and reject the ways of their historically evil peoples. And so they've been in hiding this entire time from inspired who've been hunting them, because of course nobody runs away from the inspired. Mm. And so that's where her story begins, is finding out that her entire life, she is not exactly who she thinks she is and is in fact being hunted by inspired who want to bring them back and either make her and her family realize their error of their ways or put an end to their lives.
My Kalashtar is a monk, mm-hmm. and she's who I play for my Friday game. And this is like my let out all the steam of the work week character.
Ooh,
those are fun. Because she responds with everything with punching it. So to give an example, not this past Friday, but not yesterday, but the week before, we are currently going after the big bad mm-hmm. That we didn't know was the big bad until she blew up every house for the marks in the city of Eberron. So Ooh. Every single house that was a house for the dragon marks was destroyed. Her wow. home, where she was, she ran a very profitable business for men and women to service other people of their choices, mm-hmm. where my character's significant other lived and worked. And she invited all of the highest of the dragon marks to the house that night. And then when our characters were blowing up something to kill one family that wasn't one family, because we had, my character had a vendetta against a family called the Boromar, which is a halfling clan type group, because she tricked them and they lost a lot of money and they got mad. So they went after her family. So her family's been in witness protection, basically, equivalency.
Ah.
That the big bad was the one that helped officiate, like, set up. Not to the character's knowledge. But, right. like, along the story, something happened where the person who connected our stories to hers was killed by us because he was trying to attack and kill us. And long story short, that triggered, like, over almost a year ago, that triggered this incline of issues that just slowly pieced together all these little pieces that she dropped over the year and ended with her like destroying half of the freaking city and leaving the city. We're going after her now. And she has befriended the dragons. So now we have green dragons coming after us.
Oh no.
So this adult green dragon attacked our ship and it cast its poison breath. I and I think one other person were unaffected because I'm immune to poison because of being a monk.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the other one's a warforged, so he can't breathe it in, but I'm not sure if that made him immune or not. So my character ran off the ship and jumped onto the dragon.
Ah!
To punch it in the back. And the other players, like, were still attacking from afar, or, like, they flew, like, one of them flew over to attack. And then when the dragon started to get hurt, it's like, it starts to go up. And I'm like, no, I'm staying on. I'm just going to keep punching
uh-huh.
it. So she keeps punching it. And then it dives underwater. And I'm like, no, I'm staying on. I'm going to keep punching it. And they're like, how long can you hold your breath? I'm like, I got 3 minutes. It's fine. We're good. We're great. We're fine. We're whatever. So I'm using Flurry of Blows every single round. And I'm getting disadvantage underwater, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And it shakes me off. And I took a haste potion. This is very important. I took a haste potion before all of this. So the second is getting 5 attacks per round.
Wow.
It swam away. And I go, what is my swim speed? And they're like, half your movement. I'm like, okay. So half my movement is 30, but with the haste, my speed is doubled. So my movement is 60, correct? Yes. Okay. I use Step of the Wind, which gives me an additional 60 feet because it's doubled, so half to 30. I can move 90 feet away, right? Yes. It's 80 feet away, right? Yes. Okay, I do that. I still have an action. I punch it. And then I killed it.
Oh my god! Yeah!
Underwater.
Badass Kala Shark.
And
monk.
I ripped its scale off and just swam up to the top. And I was like, did it. And then by the time I get on the ship, I am now exhausted because the haste potion has worn off. And I'm just like, I'm really tired. Can we take a nap? I literally, if that dragon would have hit me two more times, I was dead. I was literally this close, two attacks from being dead or a crit away from being dead. And I'm like, no, I'm going after it.
It's been a hell of a fucking week.
Right. Well, also, like, my character's brain was like, if this dragon leaves, it's going to tell the bad guy that we're here.
Right.
Not realizing that the bad guy already knows we're here because the bad guy has magic.
Mm-hmm.
And then we woke up with some of our hair missing. So the bad guy has options even more so. And my character went into like paranoia mode now where she's just like flicking off the air because she thinks that she's being scried upon.
Oh my God, I love it.
Just in case it's the person scrying, she's just like. But it's just really interesting. Now I get to say I punched a dragon.
Yeah, you do. And outswam that dragon.
Mm-hmm. I did, which is awesome.
Oh, moments like that really just, you are going to remember that for the rest of your life. You know, that moment of conquering. And that's something, that's actually what really got me so hooked on D&D. My partner believes, especially when first introducing people to D&D, really believes in creating a campaign and a setting that allows for heroic moments like that to really come out. And and we all know this too, that D&D really helps with mental health and wellness. And I very distinctly remember, you know, times that I was going through some pretty rough times. My partner would say, hey, you know what? You know, all of your favorite characters to date, at the time I had a drow named Aratana was one, and my Firbolg, Shantarua, Oakenheart. And he said, all of these characters that you've created, they're you. They're a reflection of you. You put so much into these characters. And so if they can survive, if they can be a champion, if they can win, so can you. You're just as strong as your own characters. And I literally, for a point in time, I had their character portraits on my phone so that anytime I looked at it, I would remember that I can draw strength from them too, just as they drew their strength from me when I created them. So that's why I really appreciate D&D and moments like those, because it can really be that inspiration sometimes to say, hey, you know what? I'm going to survive this too.
I like playing D&D because one, it gives me an outlet for my frustration, or a distraction from depression. And like when I'm in the game, while there's anxiety still, like I have depression and anxiety, while there's anxiety still, it's for a different reason. It's for, oh shit, what's happening? How did that happen? What's going on? Like, that's the type of anxiety that I'm okay with, because it's like, you're into a story. You're like, this character, how am I going to overcome this? And I talked about this before, but I use D&D and tabletop games in general as a way to explore myself, to get better at being a better person or at certain tasks. Like 2 years ago, Nikki, if you would have asked her, hey, you're going to be running a podcast that almost has 100 episodes in it, I would have been like, no, I'm not.
Right.
What are you talking about? I'm not charismatic enough for that shit. Like, no. But it might have been longer than 2 years ago. But I use D&D and Shadowrun and Mech Warrior to play face characters, to play charismatic characters, to play characters that had to be eloquent or persuasive in a way. And you can only go so far with, I rolled a natural 20. And they're like, okay, well, what do you say? That convinces them. Shit. You mean I have to actually know things? Dang it. So you had to like, I had to teach myself how to talk the right way. And in like Shadowrun specifically, it's very particular how you have to say things, because you could roll well, But if you say the wrong thing, you could trigger something.
Yes.
Which I had done and dealt with the consequences from.
Ooh.
So it's like every action in games like that had an equal reaction or a very extreme reaction. And I had to learn how to properly communicate those things. And that character was not the talker, but still it was like the general concept of it.
Mm-hmm.
Where in other games, I had to play like the seductress type character that when I'm not a seductress at all,
right.
I am like a terrible flirt personally. But then when I go and like play a succubus, I'm like, oh, hey, I know exactly what to do. But then like try doing that in real life. And I'm like, oh, what? No, gross. No, why?
Yeah.
Thank God I'm married, because otherwise I'd be screwed. I'd just be like, you want what?
Mm-hmm.
I have to pay attention to you? Fuck.
I can totally relate to all of that. For me, D&D, when I first started playing D&D, was the first time that I got to be my queer self all the time, uncensored, you know, mm-hmm. no code switching for different situations. And I was just always... It was just a part of me all the time, which of course we know is not the fact in real life. And I do believe that that is what helped me to really gain the confidence in and the courage to be able to say at the start of this, I identify as a proud queer woman of color and daughter of immigrants. There was a time in my life that I never would have even said that, you know? And so I really attribute D&D and what started to happen in my life since starting to play D&D, I think I'm about 3.5 years in now, to helping with that confidence and figuring out that part of me and how I want to express myself in my real daily life.
Yeah, I might cut this out. I'm not sure yet. But I use D&D to explore that as well.
Mm-hmm.
I am bi, and I'm not out to everybody about it. Like, people on the internet know, but not everybody does. And I don't really care if people find out. I just don't want to deal with the questions of it. So it's like,
yes.
Oh, well, you're married though. So why are you telling me this?
Mm-hmm.
Like that kind of question. I'm like, because I've been this way since I was 16. I don't know. Like,
right. Oh, you're with a cis straight guy now. So you're straight now too, right? No, it doesn't work that way.
Right. And I know that like the questions that will come up if I bring it up with certain particular people will be, well, does that mean you're divorcing your husband then? And I'm like, no, we're good.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we're fine. We just celebrated our 9th year anniversary. We're great.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And he knows.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't care. Like, I'm not going to go out looking for other people just because, oh, hey, by the way, did you know that I like girls too? He's like, yeah, I've known that since we got started dating. Like, you're not very shy about it. You just never said anything. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that's fair.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, also, all your characters are lesbians. And I'm like, oh, yeah. That's
yeah. Fair. Same.
Like, every character I play is either a lesbian or like pansexual or mm-hmm. bi or like doesn't care at all.
Yes.
I played like one asexual character. Tari was asexual. And then I realized that I actually had her grow. It was actually a really interesting story. I'm going back to Tari again for a second. We had a year lapse in mm-hmm. character. So the entire time, Tari was very naive, didn't understand. Like, she's 19, so she should have understood, but she didn't understand anything about sex. She didn't understand anything about how that worked. She didn't really care about it. She had no interest in relationships. She didn't find people attractive. She was more attracted to like their skills.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, that was so cool. I really like that one. Like, but in a sense of like, that was really cool monk shit versus like, oh, hey, he's hot.
Mm-hmm.
Having a game where you have the big bad guy, or the person who's talking to you guys constantly. Well, she runs a brothel, mm-hmm. a very fancy, expensive brothel.
Yes.
So my character was invited there a year ago, before this whole year skip happened. And I hadn't decided yet if I wanted her to go when we came back and said what we did over our course of the year. And then I decided that, nope, she did go. She went and she experienced this thing for the first time and was so confused and was just lost because you just went into it without any emotion.
Mm-hmm.
And then she met somebody there who like walked her away and talked to her and like explained things to her and calmed her down. And then they got closer and closer and closer and closer. And then she started to actually feel attachment mm-hmm. and feel an attraction, because she realized that for her, she needed to have that relationship first with the person before she felt that attraction and suddenly understood what people thought or what other people were talking about when they said, oh, they wanted to have sex. Mm-hmm. She's just like, no, they just wanted to fuck. They didn't want to make love. Like that different type of difference.
Right.
So she had to learn the difference between those two things. And this person helped her do that and like slowly learn those things. And then she kept them secret for a year because mm-hmm. she was afraid somebody was going to find out and hurt them. And they were they're androgynous and they were a change. They're a changeling. Mm-hmm. So they could shift into whatever gender other people wanted them to be, which is why they were very popular in the house. But right. For like the first 6 months, my character paid to hang out with them every week.
Oh.
And I'm like, it went from 1 week, 2 times a week to 3 times a week to 4 times a week to I'm not taking your money anymore. I enjoy hanging out with mm-hmm. you to dating.
That's like, so sweet.
And I'm like, this is the sweetest thing ever.
It really is.
And I loved it. I love that character growth for her
mm-hmm.
because I love relationships and characters. And I didn't think that she was just naive about it, but she just didn't feel it yet.
Mm-hmm.
Not everybody in the world is just like, oh, you're, yeah, that person's hot. Yeah, I do. Like, not everybody's like that.
Right.
So I didn't want Tari to be like that.
Yeah, I have a character similar to that. Earlier I mentioned my fear bulk, Shanta Rua, Oakenheart, Shanta for short. And she basically grew up like a wild child because her very tragic backstory, she was the only survivor from her clan. And she basically just, mm-hmm. nature raised her from that point on. And so by the time she met her new friends and the people that she was adventuring with, you know, she had no, very little experience with others and relationships and had no concept of sexuality. And so the first character that I've played that had no concept of sexuality, typically I do go, I'm sure you've noticed, you know, I typically do play characters that have a very strong sense of their sexuality. And so in that particular party, one of the members, he would regularly visit brothels, but nobody knew the real reason why. And for his backstory, the real reason was he didn't go for sex. He would go for the companionship and would literally just be there and lie there with the women that he paid for their time. And so they were having a conversation and he mentioned brothels and Shanta was like, what's a brothel? And he's like, oh, well, mm-hmm. you know, this is a place where people can go, you know, for a pleasure and you can make really great money doing it. And she's like, you can make money by hanging out with people? And the rest of the party was like, oh, no, dear. No, come here. Don't listen to him. You don't need to make money that way. Let me tell you what, you know, it's really about. And it was so much fun to play her because she was so sweet and innocent. And then at one point in the conversation, somebody said whores, and she was like, what's a whore? And before the character who had frequented the brothels could even say anything, one of the other party members clapped their hand over his mouth, while the other party member, who kind of took on a parental role, took her and to explain what a brothel is.
I actually had a very similar situation with Tari. It was hilarious because she was the same way. Like I purposely kept making her say innuendos without realizing it.
Yes. Oh, it's so fun to
like,
do that.
I was trying so hard not to laugh, but she's like, what? What's so funny?
Mm-hmm.
What was it? Every time somebody made a comment, she's like, why?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I remember. There was a situation where they were on a ship. And they were trying to find out what was in a box downstairs in the lower decks or whatever. So she walks in and this guy goes, hey, you want to sit down with us? I'm like, yeah, okay. Sure. You got food? Yeah. Can I have some? Yeah, of course. Mm-hmm. Sit down, please. She's like, cool. So she grabs some food. So what are you up to? And then they're like flirting with her and she's just like oblivious. She's like, no, you know, just hanging out. I want to go downstairs. Oh, we'll go downstairs, huh? Yes. Can I go with you? I mean, I guess it's a free country. I mean, I don't know. If you want to go downstairs, you can go downstairs, whatever. So he's coming downstairs. There was like more conversation, but it was very much he was saying something that she misunderstood as something else, and he followed her downstairs, and then he tried to kiss her, and she immediately like twisted his arm and slammed his face into the wall. I was like, what the fuck are you doing? He's like, what the hell? You said you wanted to come downstairs. Yes, literally, I am downstairs. What are you doing? It's like, I thought you meant you wanted to have sex. Why would I want that?
I love it.
When did I say that?
Yeah.
It's like, God, you're such a bitch. And she's like, slams his face in the wall. He passed out. Yeah. Shit. Telepathically message somebody, Akito, I think I killed someone. Help. Comes downstairs. Oh no, he's still breathing. Oh, okay, cool. What happened? He kissed me for some reason. Why? I don't know. Well, while we're here, let's just look around. And it was just like simple stuff like that, or like somebody would make a joke. Oh, there's another scene where she went to the brothel, and the person who answered the door was completely naked. She doesn't care. She's just like, okay, whatever. And someone threw him a coin. It's like, why did he get a coin? Oh, because he doesn't have his clothes on. Oh, okay. Takes off his shirt. Can I get a coin now? And they're like, put your shirt back on. It's like, what? You said if I take off my shirt, I get a coin.
That sounds like something Shanto would have done at some point.
I don't understand. What's with the double standard here? I want a gold coin. Mm-hmm. I need to save up for a new tattoo.
Oh, that's hilarious. Love tattoos. And so for Shanta, she didn't have a chance to explore any relationships until one of our other friends for that D&D group, they designed a dating AI sim game for us. And so we could bring in our favorite characters. Mm-hmm. And the premise was that there was this creator who wanted to see whether he could create the perfect automaton so that people could never be heartbroken or, you know, have a bad relationship or end up getting divorced or anything like that. And so in this dating sim, it was like a reality show. You had a choice of dates from a certain description of AIs that he built, and then a description of all the other players or all the other contestants for this dating game. And then you could choose who you were going to go on these little dates with. And in the end, if you chose the automaton, then that would be your automaton for the rest of your life. If you chose an actual person, you could only be with that person if they also chose you. So that was the catch. And so our characters had to submit like, okay, this is what we think we would look for. And she's like, I mean, I don't know. I've never had to think about this before, but you know, I think I might like sweet people. I love to eat. So maybe other people who like to eat or who like to cook too. And so she ended up going on. So the automaton was really built toward all of that, super sweet and everything. And then one of the dates she went on was with another character who was very open about their sexuality. And instead of actually being on a date, it ended up being this like kind of motherly, well, let me teach you a little bit about the world. And maybe not motherly. Motherly is probably the wrong word. And a little bit about pleasure. And then fast forward to the end where my character, where Shanta had to choose now, okay, would she found herself attracted to the person who was teaching her, more so because of that teaching aspect. But she really enjoyed her time with the automaton that was designed for her. But then she started talking the last date with them, and she asked, well, what's going to happen over time? What's going to happen when I get older? Will you get older? What happens when I'm gone? Are you going to be alone? Are your feelings real? All these questions, and it almost like kind of my friend who was DMing was like, Jamie, I wasn't prepared for these deep philosophical questions, you know, but it ended up
being... You're just supposed to like them.
Right? It ended up being such an experience. So in the end, Shanta did end up picking the automaton because she just couldn't bear... That's what it was. She asked, what's going to happen to you if I don't pick you? And she couldn't bear the thought that this life, whether artificial or not, would just be discarded if she wasn't chosen.
That reminds me of the Katy Perry music video where she was like the perfect housewife. Mm-hmm. Have you seen that one?
I don't think so, but I've heard about it.
Like, I don't remember the song off the top of my head, but she was just like, she was like the perfect housewife, and the guy was like there who was just like a test subject, but she was like made to be in love with him, but became like super crazy about it and was like, no, you're mine, like that type of thing, and eventually had to like be turned off. And when she looked over, there's like a whole wall of her, of more of her, to like creep to it. And I'm just like, no, thank you. I'll pass.
I'm going to have to ask my friend if that was the inspiration for it.
I don't know, maybe, but it's like, I mean, there was also the 90s, 2000s show where Smart House, where the house became super controlling. Like, I can't protect you if you leave, so you can't leave. It's like, no, thanks. I'll go outside. No, nope, door's locked. Okay.
It's for your own good. I know better than you do.
It's for your safety. Please trust me. I know. I've done the statistics, and statistically, you're more likely to die outside than in here. So I'm saving your life.
Exactly.
I would be terrible at making this, but now I want to make and or play in a game where you have to escape the smart house.
Next level escape room. Yes, please make it.
I would Somebody be terrible it. At it because I would not know how to like hide things in plain sight. Like I just make shit up as I go. So I would just be like, yeah, sure, there's a duct there. Why not? Oh shit, you got out. Fuck. That wasn't supposed to happen.
So if anybody is listening can make something like that, please contact us and let us know.
Escape. The smart house controlled by an AI that is super really into protecting the entire group of people inside. AI also can control all electronics, including the Roomba. The Roomba just like slides under you, has a knife taped to it.
Oh, another version of sweeping with that thing, right?
It's like it just spins in circles, cutting Achilles tendons.
That's actually very clever.
It's like, I just step over it. I think it's faster. Fuck. Run away from the Roomba. Get on the bed. It can't reach us if it's on a bed.
There was this video on TikTok that my partner showed me, and it was the Roomba versus a spider. I don't know if this thing was controlled by somebody, but it literally was, that spider would go, stop, turn, go. And that thing just kept following and kept following. But I don't think it ever caught the spider by the end. It was so close, though. It was so trippy.
I don't think I've seen that one. I don't watch TikTok videos usually, though.
Me neither. The only times I see them is because he sends them to me. He's a total voyeur on TikTok.
I've seen TikTok compilations on YouTube, and some of those are really funny. Like, I like the D&D ones, obviously.
I need to find some of those.
Yeah. There's a lot of really good D&D ones. There's also a lot of good D&D shorts on YouTube, too. But some of my favorites are like where people are like when the bard walks into the room and it's just like the bard like humping in the air or something to like music. It's like, no, I'm not a seductress. I'm a person too. But it's just like they have like little moments like that, or they play out real life scenarios, or there's a one person who makes parodies. I believe they're from TikTok, but they post them on Twitter as well. They make parodies of real songs, but make them D&D based. And it's so good. They're like 20 second long, but it's so good.
Oh my gosh. Please send those to me if you come across it again.
Yeah, I'll have to find it on Twitter. Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of really clever people out there. There was one, it was on YouTube. It wasn't a short or on TikTok, but it was dating in D&D or D&D dating or something like that. Mm-hmm. It's like, I'm here for the speed dating. And they're like, yeah, you're the right place. Okay, cool. And they walk in and then like, they thought it was classy dating and it was classes dating. So each class would go up to the table and start talking to her. And some of them were like super creepy and some of them really boring. And then some, she's just like, the hell? Like the monk punched her in the face. And like by the end, the bard was the last one. And she's like, no, what are you going to do? Are you going to punch me? Are you going to try to kill me? Like, what are you going to do? He's like, what? I would never. I just want to woo you and make sure you're in the house. She suddenly becomes so attractive. And then I want to have sex. And she's just like, oh. She like smacks him and walks away.
Oh my God, I love it.
It's just so funny. I'm just like, yeah. Or there is a lot of he likes to, that particular YouTuber also likes to have the shorts where it's like the bard is, you know, had the joke about the bard seduces the dragon.
Mm-hmm.
So the joke for him is the bard is like not attracted to anybody, but then he sees a woman in a dragon onesie, aka a dragon, and he's like, my heart.
Now I want a dragon onesie though. That sounds amazing.
Right? I think it was like, I don't know if it was a dinosaur onesie or a dragon onesie. I think it was a dragon. I mean, it was supposed to be a dragon, but
mm-hmm.
I also would like a dragon onesie, except I live in Florida and it's hot.
Ooh, yeah, I visited Florida, Orlando once, October, I think a couple of years ago. Beautiful, thunderstorms every day. No, it was it October? Maybe summertime. Thunderstorms every day, and the humidity and the heat I felt like were worse than Hawaii.
Yep, welcome to my life every day. I don't go outside, like honestly, I really don't. I go to my car, I go to work, I go back to my car, I come home.
Mm-hmm.
Like I might take a walk outside at night because that's the only time it's like cool enough. It dips a little bit in winter. Like I think we had a week or two where it was in like the 40s.
Oh,
maybe the 30s. I loved it. Like if it's below 70, I am ecstatic.
I used to think that was really cold.
But once it hits above 75, I'm just like, it's hot. I hate it.
I used to get cold in like 70 degrees in the shade. And then I moved to Chicago for 2 years prior to coming back to my hometown here in LA County. And now I love that cooler weather too. I remember thinking when I first moved, when it hit 40 degrees, I was miserable. And a friend of mine said, Jamie, just wait, you will be thankful for the day when it's 40 degrees. And sure enough, that day came in the springtime. And I said, friend, you were right.
Yep.
And now being in LA where it's hot because I'm closer to the inland side. Oh, no. Like yesterday we went out for errands. I was miserable.
I lived in San Diego for a little bit and it is just as warm temperature wise. But that humidity not being there.
Yes.
Made it better, mm-hmm. in my opinion. And like, obviously, it's a lot drier there too, which has its own set of problems where we have hurricanes here and people are like, oh my God, you have hurricane, be safe. I'm like, yeah, it's just a hurricane. Like whatever. It's mm-hmm. it's a one. It's just touching the coast. It's fine.
Right.
And then people from not Florida are like, what? No, go in your bathroom, barricade yourself. And I'm like, why?
Like, see, the hurricane part doesn't bother me, but the fact that hurricanes make landfall more often closer to Florida than making landfall in Hawaii is where I draw the line.
Honestly, like, I think there's been like two or three in the last 25 years that were like bad, that like affected me specifically.
Oh, that's not bad. Not bad at all.
Yeah, like there's big ones, obviously, and they hit hard. But like, I think Andrew was one back in like the 90s, 2000s. That mm-hmm. one was pretty bad. We had no power for like 2 or 3 weeks and schools were canceled, but we had a generator. So we still could like, we had our fridge running and we had like enough for a small TV, like with a little gaming console, like PlayStation or something. So mm-hmm. we could be entertained, but this is PS2 times, not PS5 times.
Some of my favorite games were on PS2.
Oh yeah, me too. Mm-hmm. My favorite game is Dot Hack.
I love the Dot Hack games. Yes.
My absolute favorite game was the Dot Hack system. Not the GU version, but the other one.
Mm-hmm.
I do have the GU version on Steam now, but I absolutely adored that game. And I think it was because I love MMOs now. Like, I absolutely mm-hmm. adore them. I don't play them as often because I will get sucked in and never do anything productive again.
Mm-hmm.
But Dot Hack was like a fake MMO, so you felt like you were in an MMO without being in one. So it's like, oh cool, I could go talk to all my friends and not be online and not have to whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It makes it kind of sad sounding, but also it was really fun.
Well, because there's a whole level of stress that can come with MMOs, so that does sound great. Absolutely. My favorite that I remember was Shadow Hearts Covenant. Mm-hmm. Did you ever play that game? I really like that one.
I might have, I don't remember. Honestly, when you said Shadow Hearts, I was thinking Kingdom Hearts. And then I was like, wait.
Oh, well, that no, too, of course. Kingdom Hearts is just a given.
Other than the Dot Hack series, the only other game I played a lot of was DDR. for the PlayStation 2?
Yes. Haven't played it on a console, but tried a couple of times at arcades and failed miserably.
Well, what's hilarious is, like, I've always been a heavier set person, and I could keep up with my friend who was in, like, track in, like, soccer for DDR specifically. Yeah. Only DDR, nothing else. If you asked me to run, I was dead. But DDR, I got you. I could do this. Now, yes. No, I would die.
Oh, that's awesome. I hate running too.
But we used to like just do like hard mode DDR and just like be like, okay, we're fine, we're great. And then like if I tried to do that now, I'd just be like five steps in and be like, okay, nope, I broke a hip, I broke my back, my shoulder dislocated somehow. I'm too old for this shit.
Oh yeah, I definitely for real dancing cannot dance to the level that I once used to.
Oh, I couldn't dance for shit. I'm white. No, I just don't like dancing specifically. DDR like has a purpose, so it's like it's not dancing. Like DDR is not dancing in what any form whatsoever. But give me an instrument and I'll be great. But give me ask me to dance and I'm just gonna be like doing the sprinkler. That's the only move I've got. Anyway, so on that note, where can everybody find you?
Great question. So folks can find me we'll start with my D&D world. Actually, let me reverse. We'll start with my professional world since that's a little bit shorter. For my diversity, equity, and inclusion, consulting, and all that jazz, you can find me at C3 Equity. That's the letter C, the number 3, and EQUITY on Clubhouse, on Twitter, and I'm missing one, and Instagram, Clubhouse, Twitter, and Instagram. Then for all of my D&D things, you can follow me on Instagram at Moonlit Mystery. That's M-O-O-N-L-I-T, Mystery. That's my personal. It's open to everyone. And then on Twitter, it's Moonlight Gamer, M-O-O-N-L-I-T-E, Gamer. And for, I think it's Twitch, Jamie Moonchild. Discord is also Moonlit Mystery. I think that's everything. And if you listen to the Awfully Queer Heroes podcast, I'm on there with the main team as a player for the Uncaged Anthology. And I'm looking forward to future streaming on the Awfully Queer Heroes Twitch channel for our BIPOC team for our Hawaiian culture and sovereignty inspired game.
Yeah, awesome. So you guys should all check out the details down in the description below. I will also include the link to Uncaged Anthology on Spotify. There is a playlist. But from there, you can follow and see the other shows that are also available currently. There are currently 9 episodes available up there for 3 different shows. But currently, Uncaged is the most important of the 3, so listen to that one first.
Yes. No. That's where you get to hear Jewel of the Night and her shenanigans with Teg, Onoki, and Blue.
Yes, the 3 rogues and a paladin story. So if you ask them, Blue is a bard.
Yes,
but not really.
Somehow.
Anyway, so thank you so much again for joining. This was a lovely conversation. For everybody else out there, thank you for listening. If you would like to talk to me, you can find me on Twitter at BeholderToNoOne. You can also find me on our 2 new Twitter accounts for our 2 new shows that I will mention until they are out. Dice Before Dawn for a Vampire the Masquerade game that will be starting hopefully in the next month or two, where we are slowly getting our art together and I'm so excited, and that will be DM'd by Alex the DM89 on Twitter. And then our Savage World game can be found over on Sound Control RPG. This is a science fiction game. We will be doing Radio Signal, and that will be DM'd by Dan, for the DM of The Last Tapestry. So check them both out and check out those shows. You can follow them on Twitter for more details, and sneak peeks on Patreon are available for the character art, which looks so good. Looks so cool. You can also support the show by going to that Patreon. So not only do you get the sneak peeks, you get bloopers, you get pictures, you get news, you get polls. You also get to help me counterbalance the costs of this show and allow me to continue doing 6 shows right now because I don't have a problem. But yeah, so thanks for listening. Chat with y'all later. Bye.
Bye.